The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive. A busy weekend around the front offices of NFL teams right now as the cutdowns are here this weekend. The Bills making moves over the next couple of days. Joining us on the line right now is a writer for MMQB, MMQBSI.com, and the NFL business analyst for ESPN, Andrew Brandt, who's written a post for MMQB called The Most Wonderful Season of All. Andrew, it almost sounds like a Christmas holiday, Christmas carol or something. Are you being sarcastic when you call it the most wonderful season?
Yeah, well, as you know from editing newspapers and websites, I don't come up with the title, but it's an interesting time. I certainly don't miss working in the NFL this weekend. This is the weekend that is over. It's really kind of an all-nighter on Saturday. The waiver wire comes out Saturday afternoon, and the teams just wait for it to come out and then scour it all night and start looking at tape and start looking at, hey, is this guy that Denver released or Tampa released or Detroit released, is this fourth corner better than ours? Is this sixth wide receiver better than ours? Should we get this guy on our practice squad instead of the guys we were thinking about? So all that is being done. Now, that's not to say that during the preseason all your advanced scouts are out there and they're looking at these guys, so they do have a lot of info on these guys. But as we know, this is just the worst time of year. It's ironic that it's called Labor Day weekend because the NFL labor force is reduced by 30%.
Yeah. Andrew Brandt's column is The Most Wonderful Season of All on MMQB, MMQBSI.com. And it's a busy weekend. And I wonder, do good teams, are they in the market for, you know, players to fill out the roster as much as the teams that struggle a little bit? So if you're the Seattle Seahawks, would you necessarily not be as active as, a team that hasn't made the playoffs in a while?
Well, I think even hardcore fans, and I assume a lot of people listening think of themselves as hardcore football fans, but they don't know the bottom of the roster on these teams. Mm-hmm. And your guys number 40 through 53, you can say are pretty interchangeable around the league, and that's where teams are always shuffling. It's funny you mentioned the Seahawks. I worked several years with John Schneider, the general manager there, and he's as into what I call roster churn as anybody. He's always bringing in guys to sort of keep the bottom of the roster on their toes and replace out guys and bring guys off practice squad, down to practice squad. You're going to see a lot of that. Now, we may not see teams like that claim a lot of guys this weekend, but they're going to be bringing them through all year and seeing if they're better than what they got.
Andrew, one of the points that you make in your column that I was fascinated by was while we in the media and fans focus on the 53-man roster, in these NFL teams, they're really looking at the 46-man game day roster right now, huh?
Yeah, that's the way you cut your team, really. It's you're looking at, okay, what are we going to be on game day? We're only allowed 46, which I also talk about. Yeah. I never, ever have understood that rule. But are we going to keep five receivers up or four? Are we going to keep four running backs up or three? Are we going to keep six linebackers up or five? And that ultimately comes down how you shape your roster. And unfortunately, as I say, you could have a sixth linebacker who you really like not make the team, even though he's better than a sixth wide receiver you just feel you need, maybe because of injury, experience, whatever it is. That's more important here than 53.
Yeah. And as you mentioned a minute ago, and in the article you wrote, the league persists in having this game day roster, and so there's, you know, seven players virtually on every roster who could play on Sundays, some of them healthy scratches, who can't play. What's the rationale behind that from the league standpoint?
You know, I came into the league in 1999. I've been asking that question ever since. The rationale is about competitive balance for injuries, that some team may have six injuries, some team may only have one, trying to balance it out. You know, the point I make is that injuries do balance out. That team with six injuries against one injury, maybe then later in the season they have one injury and the other team has six injuries. I just feel like that all balances out. And then, you know, from a financial point of view, that was my job. I ran player payroll, and I just hated it. I hated seeing guys that are healthy, that we're paying $10, $20, $30, $40, $50,000 a week standing in sweats because they can't play. And then there's the emotional aspect. where you tell a young player 2 hours before the game they're down, and you see that disappointment, their head down, and, you know, not that they maybe wouldn't even have played the game, but to wear a uniform means something.
Andrew Brandt is our guest, NFL business analyst for ESPN and a writer for MMQBSI.com. You talk in your post about vested veterans, guys with 4 years in the league, and how their contract considerations play a role in the roster decisions this weekend.
Yeah, for people who don't know, if you're in the league 4 years and you're on an opening day roster, your salary is in effect guaranteed, not so much as a pure guarantee, but if you're cut, at some point during the season, you're owed the remaining balance of your salary. That is, again, only for vested players. So in these discussions this weekend, teams will be talking about, is he vested? So if he is and we keep him, we're stuck with him. That's why you'll see some vested veterans not make it week one, but be brought back week two, where the financial obligation is much reduced. You would only owe them 4 weeks versus the full year. So I guess, you know, let's be honest. Financial considerations do play a role. It's not just who's better.
Now, I know that players and agents understand that it's a cold-hearted, cutthroat business, but how does that go over when a team does that to a vested veteran? You know, get rid of him for a week and then bring him back so they're not on the hook for the whole year.
Well, they're certainly better than not bringing him back.
Right.
You know, so yeah. They understand it. And, there are wink-wink deals. Like, hey, we're cutting you on Friday, because the key date is Saturday, a week from tomorrow. If you're on the roster, you get the whole year, and then we'll bring them back Monday. I've seen it happen. It's just part of the game, and experienced agents understand that. The hope is the team is never releasing the guy, but to protect themselves, they do that.
Andrew, I love the way you describe managing the salary cap. You said managing the cap is like stuffing an octopus into a box, always something hanging out. Can you talk about that and how that plays into the decisions made this weekend?
Yeah, additions, every action has a reaction. You bring on a player, you have to account for him and figure out what's on the other side. This really comes down to injuries, too. People think it's just 53 players on your cap. It's a lot more than that. It's all the charges from players you cut that you had given bonuses to that are prorated and stay on your cap. It's all your injury settlements. It's all your guys on IR who could be big, big chunks of money, like a Sam Bradford, $13 million. And it's all your practice squad guys. So you're really accounting for close to 70 players by the time it's over, not 53. And as a cap manager, you have to think that way. You can't be thinking about your 53-man roster. You have to think about every single charge.
Do most teams try to go into the year with a cushion in their salary cap so they can, you know, prepare for any eventualities?
Yeah, you have to. And, again, some teams are more strapped and up against it than others. I wrote that I like to keep $10 million as kind of a ballpark figure so that the main thing is injury problems, but also extensions. And a new feature of the CBA is you can carry over cap room from 1 year to the next. But even so, I think the best, in my opinion, the best use of cap room is always to extend young players in their contract year during the season so you have that out of the way going into the offseason. I think it's a great use of your remaining cap room, and I think teams don't do enough of it.
Why during the season? Why do you need to do that during the season?
Because off-season is always going to be different priorities. You never know what's going to happen in terms of what you're going to chase in free agency. You have the room. You might as well use it. And you can prorate off the year that you're in to eliminate some of the charges going forward.
Andrew, every preseason game around the league over the last 4 or 5 weeks, there are scouts, pro personnel scouts, even some college scouts from each team watching the bottom of the roster. It would seem to me that their work becomes very important this weekend as far as the lists that they have and the intelligence they have about some of the players who are going to show up on the waiver wire.
Yeah, as I said, these guys shouldn't be new to them. They've been scouting them, and as I talk about, even the hardcore fans turn away on the second half of the preseason game. Certainly I did. But they know these players, and these players are going to be front and center this weekend. And when you see these cuts, you know, here's what a GM does with his scouting staff. They look at this list of whatever it is, 20 players per team, and they mark down next to these names. Maybe, let's look strongly, let's keep them in mind. You know, there could be 25, 30 check marks on this list per team. So all the advance work really comes into play now. Again, there's going to be some recruiting issues about practice squads, too, that maybe a guy is cut and one or two or three or four more teams want to get him on their practice squad. There's going to be a lot of recruiting going on.
Practice squads now expanded to 10 players. And that's not a new development, but it's fairly recent. Do you think teams use the practice squad correctly? And what was the best way when you were with the Packers? What was the best way you found to use your practice squad?
Well, you use it in roster assembly. For instance, you have a team that'll go light on quarterback, only take two, but they'll obviously keep a third on practice squad. You know, when they go light at certain positions, they'll keep them on practice squad. Usually these guys are they'll be the some of the undrafted guys that got cut and some of the seventh or sixth round picks that got cut that stay on the team in this fashion. You just keep evaluating them.
Yeah.
The evaluation doesn't end in August, so you keep evaluating them all year long and see if they're worthy of being brought up. Squad players, as you know, are free agents,
yep.
So other teams can come after them too.
Last thing, Andrew, when this weekend is over and when the rosters are for the most part set, is the job of a general manager basically complete, or what do general managers and personnel departments do once the season begins?
They scout next year.
Yeah.
Yeah, the book is going to be closed on 2014 for the front office in many ways. Sure, as I said, there may be an extension here or there. There's going to be bottom of the roster change-out, churn, as I said, through the season. But I'd say 80%, they're off to next year. GMs are on the road going to their universities during the week and meet the team on the weekend. Cap managers are already preparing for next year. And it's the job of the coaches now. It's coaches and players on-field versus off-field stuff. So it's interesting that people, I don't know if people know that, but right, you know, after this week, so much of the front office is already about next year.
Yeah. Well, and then it becomes really the most wonderful season of all. Andrew, thank you very much for spending time with us tonight. We appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, John.
Andrew Brandt is the ESPN NFL business analyst. He is a writer for MMQBSI.com, and his recent post, The Most Wonderful Season of All, which deals with roster assembly from the football department view this weekend, with all the cuts coming down this weekend. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.